knew. I wonder how much she misses Brandon, out in the woods halfway across the planet. One day our son will become a white dwarf, Elise pointed out. We're looking at the future of our own star.
There's no sidetracking her, Jordan realized.
After several days of hesitation, Longyear and Yamaguchi accompanied Jordan into the city and began examining not only the people but their beasts of burden and their pets. Yet they returned each night to the camp. The biologist grew more and more mistrustful. It's terrestrial DNA, all of it. Every species we've examined carries an almost exact duplicate of Earth-type DNA. Yamaguchi seemed happy enough about it. She began to write a research paper titled Convergent Evolution, Earth and Sirius C. Longyear grudgingly helped her with it. Jordan worried about Meek, who seemed to be lost in his fears, accomplishing nothing as the days wore on, staying in the camp and never setting foot in the city. Audrey came to visit the camp, and Jordan showed him through the labs and workshops. When they came to the biology laboratory, Meek was sitting at the workbench on a stool, his heels hooked on one of its rungs, the knees of his long legs almost reaching his squared-off chin. "Hello, Harmon," Jordan called. "We have a visitor." Meek nodded warily.
"Dr. Meek," said Audrey, smiling amicably, "how can I convince you that we are not dangerous to you?"
Meek's brow furrowed. At last he said, "You could answer my questions truthfully." Audrey nodded.
"Of course."
Jordan saw his brow arch slyly as he added,
"Would you like to test me with a lie detector?"
Looking annoyed, Meek said, "I wish I had one."
"Perhaps you could construct one."
Hiding his amusement, Jordan said, "I'm sure that won't be necessary. Will it, Harmon?" Meek didn't answer. Without being invited, Audrey pulled up one of the stools lining the workbench and sat next to Meek.
"Ask me anything you wish, sir."
Jordan stood off to one side, scrutinizing the expression on Meek's face. He saw fear and sullen resentment. Yet something more as well. There was human curiosity tucked in among his apprehensions. "Where do you come from?" Meek started.
"Why, from here, this planet, New Earth."
"You were born here?"
"I've lived here all my life."
"How old are you?"
12.
Meek's eyes went wide. Jordan chuckled and said, 12 New Earth years. Each orbit of this planet around Sirius takes 30 Earth years.
Which means, Meek said, that you're 360 years old?
His eyes went even wider. Audrey smiled modestly.
Yes, your arithmetic is correct.
360 years old? Meek yelped.
I'm afraid so.
Do your people regularly live such long lives? Jordan asked. Audrey nodded solemnly.
Yes, so can you. Your biological sciences are steadily increasing your lifespans, are they not?
Yes, but 360 years, Jordan marveled. We haven't reached that yet.
We can help you, said Audrey.
Then he added, although with your enormous population, I wonder if extending your lifespans would be a good thing. Meek recovered from his surprise.
How old is your race?
Our civilization goes back many millions of years.
And you've existed on this one planet all that time?
Audrey spread his hands.
My race has lived only on this planet. We have never lived elsewhere.
Jordan said, what we find remarkable, unbelievable almost, is that you're so much like us. This entire planet is so Earth-like. It's uncanny.
Yes, I suppose it is.
It's more than uncanny, Meek grumbled. It's unbelievable. To find a planet exactly like Earth and intelligent beings exactly like humans...
Not exactly, Audrey pointed out.
Down to your DNA, said Meek.
Yes, biologically we are very similar, Audrey admitted. But socially, culturally, we have significant differences.
You control your numbers, said Jordan.
We live in harmony with our environment, Audrey responded. We are not xenophobic. We are not competitive, not aggressive. We have welcomed you to our world, while you are distinctly suspicious of us.
Before Meek could reply, Audrey amended,
Perhaps I should say you are instinctively suspicious of us.
Meek said, "You disapprove of our instincts?"
Smiling gently, Audrey replied, "It's not a matter of my approval or disapproval. Your instincts served you well long ages ago, but now you must outgrow them."
"Why? Because you say so?"
"Because they are destroying you. You have devastated your planet with overpopulation, with environmental degradation, with famines and wars and hatreds. You are teetering on the brink of extinction, whether you realize it or not."
"You sound like one of those overzealous eco-activists," Meek said.
"Forgive me," Audrey immediately apologized. "I should not be telling you how to live your lives."
"Someone should," said Jordan.
"It's just that..." Audrey hesitated, seemingly gathering his thoughts. At last he said, with infinite sadness in his voice, "It's just that to witness the destruction of an intelligent race is a terrible, terrible thing."
"Do you really feel that we are so close to destroying ourselves?" Jordan asked.
"Indeed," said Audrey, his aged face showing grave concern. "You are heading for extinction. Racing toward it, I'm afraid."
Questions. Meek seemed thoroughly chastened as Audrey sat on the stool beside him, his expression bleak. Jordan himself felt unutterably sad at the thought of the human race's extinction. Rousing himself, Jordan said,
"Well, we're not dead yet. We can overcome our problems if we want to."
"If you want to," Audrey agreed. "That's the question. Can you alter your modes of behavior, your ways of thinking, soon enough and well enough to avert the catastrophe that's facing you?"
"We can try," said Jordan.
"We will help you all that we can, of course," Audrey said. "But your people will have to make some wrenching changes in their fundamental attitudes."
Meek said nothing. He seemed lost in thought.
Audrey got up from the stool. "I must return to the city now. Dr. Meek, I hope I have given you the information you sought."
Meek nodded wordlessly. Jordan said, "I'll go with you to the edge of the camp, Audrey."
"No need for that, friend Jordan. I can find my way."
He turned and headed for the lab's door in his seemingly effortless, gliding walk. As soon as Audrey was out of sight, Meek stirred to life.
"I don't trust him. Despite everything he says, I don't trust the man."
"Perhaps," Jordan said, "you don't trust him because of everything he says." To Jordan's surprise, Thornberry took up residence in the city. He spent his days in happy conference with young men and women who were fellow engineers.
"It's unbelievable the things they can do,"
he said to Jordan and Aditi over dinner one evening.
"I mean, they've developed quantum computers, for God's sake. No bigger than a grain of sand, yet more powerful than anything we've got. They implant them in their skulls at birth."
"I know," said Jordan, looking at Aditi.
"I mean, we've been talking about quantum computers for damn near a century now, and we're nowhere near making one work. These people carry them around inside their heads. If I could bring one of them back home, I'd become a billionaire overnight, I could."
Aditi said, "We can show you how to build them."
Thornberry nodded eagerly.
"I'm talking to your bright young folks about just that, I am."
"Good," Jordan said. The three of them were sitting at a small table in the dining area of the dormitory building. The place was filled with Aditi's people, young and old, men and women. Conversations in their fluted musical language and laughter drifted across the room. Human servants carried trays of food and drink to the tables. "But they're not human," Jordan thought as he listened to Thornberry with half his attention. "They're human in form, but they belong to a different race, a different civilization. They're aliens."
"And these energy shields," the roboticist went on, "they take them for granted, they do. It's ordinary engineering as far as they're concerned."
Aditi said to Thornberry, "The shield generators are ordinary engineering. After all, we've used them for many generations."
"I know," said Thornberry. "But what I can't figure out is how they work."
"The engineers haven't explained it to you?"
she asked.
"They explain it to me for hours, they do," Thornberry said. "But for the life of me, the more they explain, the less I understand."
Jordan snapped his attention to the roboticist.
"What do you mean, Mitch?" They're talking about physics and principles that are beyond me.